Welcome, everybody, to Minisode number 30. We're all kind of in a mood. I don't know. I don't know what happened. We're all kind of... I don't know.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm drinking coffee, so I'm fine.
Yeah?
Yeah. Was that sexual eyes? I mean, we're talking about the way he did that.
Well, it may have been sexual eyes, because I'm about to review Superman, The Coming of the Superman. What an awful name for a book.
Get out of the way of that.
Unfortunately.
Be careful. Yes. Close your eyes.
So... This book was written, drawn, inked by Neil Adams, who is a classic artist in the field of comics. He has had variant covers all of this past month, and a lot of them, I feel like he really phoned it in, and this book is no different. I hated his art in this, and I don't think he's a bad artist. I do think he's kind of a dick, but if you go meet him, you'll probably feel the same thing.
It's a dick, and he talked about coming.
We went that far. All right. So, this book is probably the biggest piece of crap I've ever read from DC. I hated this book a lot. And I'm usually pretty fair with DC. It is a story about three Supermen showing up out of the blue who are kind of equivalent to, like, a younger Superman. They're not as experienced. You kind of get the feeling as the story goes on that they're new to the planet, and they're just starting to get charged by the sun. So they, like, figure out heat vision in the middle of a battle. Mm. And the battle happens to be against Kalibak, Darkseid's son, who comes through the boom tube. And the narration of the book is done by Lois Lane, who is reporting on air the news story as it happens. And her dialogue is just atrocious. It is really just terribly written. But, I mean, he's not really a writer. He's an artist. But this was just... really tough, and it's really insulting when it gets to the end. There's a character that keeps popping in and out. He's this big, he has got big wings, he looks like a demon. He does not look like a good guy, even though he comes off as a good guy. And he keeps talking to Superman like, hey, I gotta show you stuff, but I can't really tell you too much. And it's one of those weird, thinly veiled, I don't know. So they go back in time, right? And he shows him the making of the pyramids. And who's making the pyramids? It's Darkseid's father, who looks just like Darkseid, and kind of it's Apocalypse's X-Men Origins kind of crap all over again. Oh, it's insulting. It's garbage. I'd say I expected more, but honestly, I didn't. This book is bullshit.
Where does it fall on your Totally Awesome Hulk scale?
It is better than Totally Awesome Hulk.
Mm. Wow.
But not by much. I'm going to have to really make a scale so everybody knows, A, where things really fall, and B, how much I hate the Totally Awesome Hulk. I could read more issues of Totally Awesome Hulk to give you a better idea.
Is there any sexual innuendos?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Really. Nah, I don't want to read it. The title is it.
But that could have made it better. Yeah. Taking us back to a previous episode with Leander's Secret Six, which was just loaded with innuendos, and made it better.
Yeah, this book's bullshit. I hate it. I'm done with it.
Mm. All right.
Yep, it's awful. Don't read it.
All right.
Rich was right. Hashtag Rich was right.
It's not something you can say very often.
Sorry, Rich.
Speaking of hashtags, if you're into hashtag Fastformers, which you should be, everyone should be into Fastformers right now, hashtag Fastformers. You should be reading some IDW, because right now IDW is throwing people together. They should not be together whatsoever.
Oh, here it comes.
So the back of this this book, first of all, which is not the actual comic, is the Green Lanterns in Star Trek. So that should already start to tell you how horrible this is going to go. So let's go with Street Fighter and G.I. Joe.
What?
Let's get them together into... Shut your mouth.
Yep, that was my other book.
I will admit that Tim's cover is better than yours.
I agree with that. Yes. Yeah. Well, he also works at a comic store. He can get whatever cover he wants when he sees it.
This was sitting on the shelf. Mm-hmm. It was fair game.
Yeah. All right.
I told myself I wasn't going to buy this book, and then I did.
Yeah, I only bought it for the podcast. It was a worthless piece of $5. All right, so...
No, that's not true. No, it's not the worst.
All right. It's not the worst. All right, so here's the deal. First of all, M. Bison and
Destro
are together, and they're like, oh, let's hold a tournament, right, for all the fighters in the world, because that's what they do now. And so somehow it all happened already. We're down to the final nine.
I actually didn't mind that.
I was okay with it too. Because it's less reading. I wanted to see more character interaction. This isn't that kind of book,
and you should know that from the beginning.
No, it is called Street Fighter and G.I. Joe,
and you expected a lot.
Yes, I did. Mm. First of all, it's too short. It's like literally like 10 pages, and then there's a bunch of fluff. And so it's just a bunch of fluff here. There's nothing going on.
I like the fluff.
No, stop it. The fluff was better than the bomb in the comic. So, they picked some interesting Street Fighter characters, first of all. They did not pick mainstream.
Nope.
They went with Sea Viper, Rufus, Hakan, which is the oily guy. He's just all oiled up all the time.
Yeah.
That sounds sexual. You, and M. Bison, of course. And then for G.I. Joe is Snake Eyes, which is fine. Baroness, fine. Roadblock, which I was interesting. Jinx and Destro. I don't even know who Jinx is.
It just says
Ninja Apprentice is literally what she is, but I'm sure she has more
than
that.
She's Snake Eyes' apprentice, but for some reason in this book, she's Ryu's apprentice.
Yeah, for some reason. Which made no sense. So, Sea Viper and Baroness are working together for some reason, but they both get beat up in the first two pages. I'm like, alright, that was a waste of my time, seeing the plot come together just for them to get beat up. And then Rufus is making out with some girl, like, randomly. Apparently, he can have any hot chick he wants now, because he's a Street Fighter person. I think that's the whole point.
But what's important is they're making out on the bonus stage car.
They are,
Street Fighter 2.
They are
oh, that's great.
That is true.
There is a lot of cool nods to both G.I. Joe and Street Fighter in this.
Yeah,
it's not a good book.
It's
but
not a good book.
There's tons of good nods.
Okay.
He's butchering it. He hates it.
It's literally just Street Fighter and G.I. Joe in a ring fighting back and forth, and you never know who's going to win. Ryu almost turns into Akuma, but then he doesn't. He's like, calm down, and he goes to inner peace. And then he does a Hadouken, but it misses, apparently. And then the ninja girl's like, oh, you taught me. You're like my father. I'm so over it. I'm done.
All right. I was going to say, you have anything you want to add to
Please add whatever you want to do to make this better.
I can't make the book better.
All right.
The book is what it is. It is the finals of the tournament, the final eight. And it's narrowing it down over the course of the next couple issues in the miniseries. But you would on paper, you would say they have nothing in common, except they do. Back when G.I. Joe was the 3¾ toy line, right before it ended, they had Street Fighter toys in the toy line. So they've been connected for years. This book, the thing I liked about it, if you're already down for this, you're not looking for story. We've already established that. Characters who you don't think will win, do win.
Yeah.
And it has in the back, the fluff is, it tells you who won the previous matches, who they defeated to get to the final eight, which was a nice add-on. It had the file cards for all the characters in the back, like you would have on the G.I. Joe toys. They had the file cards on the back. You can cut them out of this piece of crap book and enjoy them, if you so choose. The book wasn't great, but it's not the most insulting book I've ever read. You seem to hate it.
I don't like it at all.
Well, as a piece of storytelling, it's not good.
Yeah.
Fan service, it's okay.
As fan service,
like
it is
the oily guy fights Roadblock. Roadblock's the cook. They talk about the oil and how he should add it to his cooking. It's dumb.
It is dumb.
But you know, whatever. It's whatever. It's pretty bad. Okay. It's
all right.
Bad.
That's it. I gave him a death.
I'm so sad that you took this book from me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And I killed it.
Yeah. Well, it's not Coming of the Superman, Dad.
It's not. It's not. All right, please. Something
to
do better.
Surprise, I will be reviewing The Mighty Thor number 4, which has Odin has sent out a bounty on Thor, claiming her to be the false Thor, that she should never have the hammer or anything like that. The book picks up right where the last one left off, where Thor got knocked out of Thor form. So you see it as Jane Foster falling, trying to grab the hammer, but it's not coming back to her. And Loki's just standing there, watching the carnage unfold. Picks up with Meliketh and the Dark Elves taking out the Light Elves. Thor's not happy, wants Meliketh to retreat, trying to protect the Light Elves. And the leader of the Light Elves ends up coming out, halting the fighting, and says that she wants to speak to Meliketh to work something out. And also on Loki's dad's back. I'm not sure when he came back to life, but he's back. And they end up with, I don't know how to pronounce her name, the Light Elf's leader, and Meliketh are talking in a chamber. She thinks that she's being guarded by all of her magicians. Meliketh is, they're all just false images. Mm. So it's just the two of them. He says that he will stop the assault if they agree to marry each other. If she agrees to marry him.
Mm. Classic.
Mm. So then you go back to Asgardia, where Odin has Freya on trial for treason, for working against him, trying to keep everything together. And it's a lot of what seems like a angry couple that have been together for a really long time trying to air their grievances with each other.
Mm.
And going back and forth, she's telling Odin that he needs to come to his senses, listen to the people of Asgardia that are there chanting for him to come to his senses, let her be in charge. You know, putting her on trial is ridiculous. She didn't really do anything wrong. She was just trying to do for what's best for Asgard. And Odin just says, I am Asgard. Mm. What I say is what's right. Mm. So the people rise up and start fighting against the Thunder Guard that are there. Odin's brother sends the destroyer out after them, which doesn't end well for the masses. And as Odin's getting ready to lay the smackdown on Freya, Thor pops up with Loki in handcuffs.
Hmm.
And she's not happy with Odin because he's trying to kill her.
Sure.
And she's just trying to do what's right for Asgard, since she knows who all these people are and none of them are sure who she is. So Loki and his mom have some interesting commentary, which I liked because they had fun commentary in the movies. Loki jokes about them both being in shackles, and isn't that funny? So Thor ends up pot-shotting Odin clean in the face with a hammer. So the next issue is going to be what I'm assuming is an all-out war between Odin and Thor, which I think should go well, but then that makes me think, since Odin imbued the power in the hammer,
mm-hmm.
why can't he just take the hammer from her? So is he no longer worthy to wield the hammer either?
Maybe, yeah.
So I think that would be something interesting if they followed along with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to keep reading the book. I think it's dropped off a little bit, but the art's still great, and I'm still really happy with Jane Foster as Thor, with it being something different.
Nice. Has Odin's son appeared at all in the book?
Thor's popped up once or twice, but okay. Sort of just in passing.
And he's more like he was before Secret Wars?
The big axe.
Yeah, he has the big axe and the dwarven steel arm.
Right.
He showed up more in the previous incarnation of the Thor
correct.
Than he has in this. But okay. I'm glad that they're kind of leaving him out.
They should.
So that you can focus more on her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that she gets to stick around longer, because I think it's like a nice change of pace.
We don't need him back. I just want him around still.
Right, and I'm fine with him still being around. I'm fine with him having this big, giant battle axe of destruction. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that you come to think that it's just the hammer that gives them all their power, but he's still a god this battle axe. So it's like, what does the hammer really give to him? You can see what it'll give to Jane Foster as a mortal, but he's a god. So what did the hammer really give to him other than the outfit?
In the flight. He can't fly.
Right.
Mm. Interesting. Well, hopefully that book stays good.
I hope so.
Yeah. All right. Olivia?
Well, I am back with Dark Knight 3, Book 3. And it's just meh. I'm not a huge fan of this so far, 3 issues in. I did learn that the little tiny issues in this are actually relevant to the story, so if you've been reading this like I have and not reading the little small issues, they are actually relevant.
Interesting.
So you learned that. So basically, Batman's not dead, and we're still not really sure who the girl is that was his imposter the first issue.
Mm.
Just someone who was just by his bedside when he was all in the hospital injured. But Batman's really old. Kind of like the old man Logan of DC.
Mm.
Old and angry and injured. And so Yeah, we're still dealing with these Kryptonians that have come to Earth and kind of put an ultimatum on the Earth, like, you either accept us as gods, or we're gonna destroy everything.
Classic.
Like, and they just sort of come out of nowhere. So I'm not sure where they come from. Oh, yeah.
Coming in the Superman.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Basically.
Sounds like a better story, right?
So, yes, the Batman and the girl are kind of teammates. They're kind of working, like, he kind of took her as, like, an apprentice, sort of. And
he
they, right. And they climb the mountain and they go find, Superman, who's frozen. They, break the ice on him.
Hammer right to the top of his
right
head.
To the head. and kind of just, they let him know that, hey, there's, Kryptonians, they're on Earth, and bad things are gonna happen. You better wake up.
He's
like, did you say my people? Yep. Yes, we did. And of course, you know, in a Superman way, he cares about that thing. So there's a character that is Wonder Woman and Superman's daughter. Her name is Kandor. Or Lara or Kandor, both, whatever her name is. And she ends up falling on the wrong side of the battle. She ends up being on the side of the Kryptonians. She, yeah, identifies more with them, I think, as you can see from her interaction with Wonder Woman, where, like, of course, Wonder Woman's all about, like, you know, be a warrior, blah, 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 and all that stuff. And the daughter's like, you know, I don't care, Mom. It's like, I'm a Kryptonian.
Come with the Superman.
Yeah, I'm coming with the Superman.
Oh, oh, no.
So, Batman and Superman are, at the end of the comic, are teaming up against these Kryptonians, and that's when Superman sees his daughter, like, oh shit, what's she doing here, and why is she, you know, on their side? So
she looks mighty pissed off.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah, I gotta see her and check her out.
Leander's gonna objectify this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go for it.
All right.
She looks pretty angry.
She looks pretty pissed off. All right, girl powered.
All right.
All right. Awesome. Is this for me?
Do it.
I'm gonna round this out. I'm gonna review All New X-Men number 5. Dennis Hopeless is the writer. Mark Bagley doing the art. I don't think I've reviewed this. I'm just going to give everybody a little bit of a backstory. This is the second arc for the all-new X-Men. The first one focused on young Cyclops is... it's actually been hinted to in a lot of other books, but Cyclops, the regular Cyclops, is dead right now. He made mutants look like assholes, and it kind of like set mutants back. Years, you know, everything that the X-Men were fighting for, everything that they fought for equality and mutants, you know, he kind of ruined, and he inspired these radical, almost terrorist-like mutants. So, young Cyclops actually fights these guys and is like, you are not the ideals, you're not giving us a good name, and you know what? I actually have this chance to be what Cyclops wanted to be, you know, when, because he is Cyclops from the past, he's like, I know what I can do, and now with all these, you know, new avenues and new ways to do it, I can portray the message that I want, and that actually gets taken a video on YouTube, and it goes global, so the X-Men are kind of like rock stars everywhere they go, so they show them going to Tokyo and a few other places, and they're actually really popular. So this one is actually, the start of this arc is X-23 and Angel are dating. And Angel has a problem because Lara is kind of like, she's just really, she doesn't really care. She has the healing factor. She's like, oh, well, she doesn't really formulate plans. She's like, I'll just figure it out. You know, worst comes to worst, I'll just heal myself. So she goes running into fires, goes in getting shot up just because she's, you know, falling back on the fact that she'll heal. So they actually are in France and they run into the Blob and he just destroys her in issue number 4. He, like, belly flops on her, breaks her whole, like, skeletal. It's ridiculous. And this is a really cool fight. It bleeds into the 5th issue. And this starts with Angel actually confronting him. And just like Laura, he kind of gets the shit kicked out of him. So this fight is, like, transgressing, like, all throughout France. And it's, like, going through the street. It's a pretty cool battle scene. And then you actually see, on the other side of town, I'm going to say this wrong. I'm going to butcher this name. But it's Idi Okonkwo. Mm-hmm. And she was born and raised into the church. And she was always, you know, raised like, you know, mutants are wrong. Mutants are devils with human flesh. And she's actually just having this monologue, this inner monologue with God. Like, I was raised hating myself, hating everything about me, because this is what I was taught. And if you don't love me, I have a whole bunch of friends that will. And you tell everyone, religion is telling everyone that we're demons, that we're wrong. And I know that's not the case, because I know these people are here for the greater good of mankind and for the world. The book actually, it tells a few really good stories. This also goes into Iceman and dealing with his homosexuality and finding his comfort and coming out to the rest of the X-Men, because they all know that he's a homosexual, but he still doesn't like to talk about it because he doesn't know how it'll affect his relationship with Beast and the other X-Men. So, you know, the reason I wanted to review this is the fight was really good with the Blob, and this kind of relationship with Laura and this you know, recklessness is really good, because I started reading this book just to tie into X-23, and I'm actually surprised at how good this is. I can compare this kind of to an Archie or to a Jughead, which we were reading, where it tells really real stories in a fictional way that you might not think about it, but I think everybody can relate to something like this. The art's pretty good in this book, and the way that everything ties together into the recklessness of humans and to, you know, not feeling comfortable into your own skin. This book has a little bit of something for everybody, and I think, you know, you should add this to your bin. This is a really good read. This is like this seems like halfway through this arc right here, and the last arc was amazing. This arc's pretty good, so definitely give this book a look.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I'm just happy we got a good Blob fight.
Blob is wrecking some shit in this book, man. It's pretty cool.
Does the fight conclude by the end of this?
I actually don't think it does. And, like, this is, like, the last, like, splash page right here, where it's, like, Beast, you got Kid Apocalypse and Cyclops. And even with the strength of the three of them, the Blob is still just wrecking shit in, like, France. He's just going absolutely insane. But the last thing you actually see, I guess it's not too much of a spoiler, but Angel is like, you know what, I can't do this anymore, because I care about you too much, because one day you're just going to do something so dangerous that you might come back, but you might not be the same person. And if you don't care enough to change for me, then I can't put myself through this. So it kind of ends more on the front of their relationship than the fight. So this fight might actually continue into the next issue.
Nice.
Very nice.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. There'll be more reviews coming soon. And make sure you check us out. CapesandScalesPodcast.com. We're on YouTube. We're on iTunes. We're on everything. Go check us out. All right.
Fastformers.
#Fastformers.